I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Finger, finger. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
I'll take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
Welcome back. I'm not quite sure really how to open, Andy.
I'm
going to
interrupt
you.
What? The last 15 minutes has been brilliant. Have we recorded it?
I wish we had.
I don't mean to.
He's great with DJ, and actually we have the kit now with which you could spin.
Did you spin?
The Wheels of Steel.
It's an actual DJ.
Would you call that, Nigel?
Spinning.
Is it scratching?
Scratching.
Yeah.
Luis has got a new nowadays, mixing table, which makes everything sound very...
I've never seen him this excited since the day he got married, I have to say.
And he's a man who's about to become a father.
Yes, he is.
And this has taken more of his attention this week than that prospect.
The actual pregnancy,
Yeah. Let's hear your beat thing.
I like it.
You like that, eh? So you guys can talk, and I just do the beat in the background. You can make a whole show out of this. I already see anyway. Ton of ideas already in my head.
Welcome. This is Keys Gray and DJ. And if you're scratching your head thinking, DJ, I'm sure we all by now know it's Nigel de Jong. Manchester City legend. Not you. Will be joining us today.
Thank you very much for listening. This will be the last episode I'm doing with these gentlemen right
here. We will be joined later by a City legend. Mm-hmm. Three consecutive seasons, he was top scorer.
Oh. Franny Lee?
Yeah.
They beat Franny?
Premier? No. Mm.
No. See, that's the trouble.
When I see Franny
Lee, you went, that was a Premier League.
No. Franny was chairman by then, of course. He was a guest.
But Franny would have been up there, wouldn't he, as goal scorer?
Franny, oh, absolutely.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He must have been like that, as regular as that.
Legend. Yeah. Lee, right, Summerby. I mean, what a side that was.
Yeah.
We don't want to spend too much time reminiscing.
Is that 68?
68.
Mm. 68, yeah.
68. They won the title, and of course, United topped it by winning the
European Cup. That's a bummer.
So it took the whole shine away.
Your generation to actually establish which was the dominant club in Manchester.
What is it, 35 years later? 32 years later to date?
Easy.
So, No, I'm happy that we can speak to an actual City legend.
We might start differently, because the conversation about the coffee we had many, many months ago when you first joined us went down very well. Give me one thing, both of you, that you miss from home. In your case, not England, Scotland. What's the one thing that you would say you miss most about the country of your birth?
Scenery.
Good answer.
Scenery.
Mm-hmm. Some of the most beautiful scenery anywhere. Scenery, definitely. Right up there.
I'll go for simplicity. I live in the city centre. Mm-hmm. I have one step out of my door, take my bike, and I'm going everywhere with my bike. So simplicity.
I get that with the bike. When I lived in London for 2 years, I loved the bike. He was outrageously, constantly bullying me about being on the bike.
Yes, right.
I would be crossing
one of the bridges.
Waterloo Bridge, Westminster Bridge, one or the other going to work. And of course, all of a sudden, I would hear this outrageous noise, him coming and going, get out of the way!
I used to tame it night, so I knew he'd be running up the bridge, and I'd wave my window down. I'd say, get that bloody bike off the road, you're causing a blood, and where's your crash helmet if you're so safety conscious?
He did that one day, and I'd looked two cars ahead of him, and there was a police car up there. And he didn't realize. Me, summer rain.
Summer rain, yeah.
I think summer rain is beautiful.
Yeah.
The smell of the dust that settles after summer rain, the freshness, that's what I miss most.
So when you say simplicity and bike, how you go out your town centre house, on your bike, how far do you go? Where would you go?
What is it? I think maybe 200, 300 yards, because I live in
You should take more than 200, 300 yards.
Why don't you walk then?
I can walk, but I like to get the bike as well. It keeps you fit and healthy.
300 yards on the bike.
Yeah, but it's not only to the first shop, but then you can go all around town with the bike. You're not going to go walk
Amsterdam.
All around. You're talking Amsterdam. You're talking about hometowns, right? So Amsterdam is my hometown over all these years still. But simplicity and obvious friends and family. Yeah. I think that is also one of the things that you always miss
that's a given.
Yeah, people would be a close.
That's a given. So I didn't want to go there with that.
I go for simplicity. I think simplicity. Scenery. I think scenery.
What about the mushrooms?
Oh, I tell you, Nigel, have you played Loch Lomond yet?
It's mushrooms.
Yeah,
it depends what kind of mushrooms.
Magic
you're
mushrooms,
about.
You mean?
Well, I'm from Amsterdam. Been there, done that on an early age as well.
Legal, course. We should state right now, legal.
So I'm not really missing those, to be honest, quite frankly. And as I'm a parent, I have to be a little bit more responsible now.
Of course. See, I'm still scared. I've never had a cigarette.
Have you?
No. Never. Never.
You see,
there's always a first
time. Did you smoke?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
How many?
No, not smoked in the sense of during my career. No, of course not, because that was illegal. But before everything kicked off, yes, I did. I mean, when you're in Amsterdam, you're growing up, that's the standard. You have to go. You have to see the red light district.
Is that one there?
You have to go see one of the coffee shops.
What do you mean red light district?
Can we discuss that? I think this was
is it a place with lots of
that's yes, that's the traffic light zone. Traffic light zone. Now let's get serious. A number of things to discuss this week. The first being noisy sheep.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've seen the news. Cristiano Ronaldo moved mansions because there were some noisy sheep around his house that he was what he was in, and they were so noisy. And then they came into his backyard, was it?
A security team had whisked the Manchester United legend and his family to a £6 million home in 23 acres days after he sealed his return to Manchester United. But the striker moved out less than a week later due to the racket from sheep.
Mm. 23 acres and he could hear the sheep. My God, he's got good ears.
He's got good ears.
23 acres. He could hear
maybe
the sheep.
Maybe he has a phobia, you know. You never know. Maybe.
Honestly. Seriously.
There must have been a lot of sheep then.
Yeah.
Well, they do add in this article and security fears, but I'm what security what, issues might
the
there
sheep
be?
Are going to break in. Who's that in the kitchen?
Hey, you never know. I've seen stranger things in the past. They can use animals to be spies.
I get that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Would you, had you been Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, have told him to sit down midweek?
Talking about Cristiano, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
You'd have been okay with him hanging about on your shoulder, barking instructions?
Why not?
Well, because he's... I'm the coach. Sit down.
It's because of the player that he is. And also he's not doing it on purpose, just trying to be the coach out there. I mean, this is his willingness to win. We've seen him doing that also with the Portuguese team. He doesn't have a problem with it.
Well,
and he's not the type of...
When you say that neither coach has a problem with it, both coaches have probably been told by him, this is what I'm going to do. They must have a problem with it. You can't have... It's an almost... mutinous act. Sit down. I'm in charge.
I get that I'm in charge, Brett. I get that. But
It's his passion for what he's watching and his passion for wanting a result.
Well, he's not alone. He's not the only one. What if the rest of the bench got up and started doing it? The other eight.
But don't you think he has a slight advantage over the other players and a slight?
But he shouldn't have.
I think we can't say it, especially being the best player of the last, one of the best players of the last decade, and especially how he came.
He just made United. I mean, Ollie's doing a good job at a little bit like Pochettino. If there's a way to lose a match, one or the other or both will find it. So he's doing a job on his own and must stand or fall by that. I can't get that at all.
Was it quite a graphic rebuke from him?
It was the same as it was during that European Championship.
No, I'm talking about Ollie's dismissive way of Ronaldo.
No, Ollie didn't dismiss it. Ollie stood there and let him walk away. I was just carrying on.
I thought he told him to sit down.
No, I would have told him to sit down.
Yeah, you would.
I would.
No, you wouldn't do anything.
Yes, I would.
You say that now. Yeah. You wouldn't do that.
Oh, yes.
I know you would.
I like this from Brian Reid in The Mirror. According to a report by UEFA's technical experts, England lost the 2020 final.
Here we go.
Due to playing an excessive number of long balls. Now, says Brian, naturally, I bow to the highly paid footballing brains that discovered this telling insight, but feel duty bound to point out that they actually lost it due to an inability to accurately hit much shorter balls from the penalty spot.
Honestly.
What I'm listening to.
They got to the final, got beaten penalties, but they lost it because they played too many long
according
balls.
To this technical committee report.
How can that be? I
asked Nigel. He's closer to it than we are.
I'm still hearing it. He's sitting here in flabbergasted,
Brian makes a very good point. The reason they lost it is because they couldn't score from 12 yards.
Yeah.
Not because they were knocking balls across the pitch.
Exactly. Missed three penalties from 12 yards.
Yeah.
And yet these guys, and we know one or two of them.
Yes, we do.
Moisey was one of them, which surprises me for him to be part of a technical committee that comes up with that. But
we love analysing, do we, nowadays?
We're stuck with it, I'm afraid. We are stuck with it.
On the subject of Manchester United, Antonio Conte would be open to being Manchester United boss if called upon.
Well, he's not getting called upon.
Not
unless United are sixth come December, that he's not getting called on.
No, I don't think so.
The reason I don't think he's getting called on is I think he's got to sit out another year to get his money.
You think United might get rid of him?
You just
sat there with me 3 weeks ago and said, I fancy him for the title this year.
I do. I do, but I just sense there's growing unease amongst the Manchester United supporters, particularly after that game this past week, that especially in Europe, he's coming up short.
It was a plastic patch. Come on, give him a break.
It's no men overboard. Come on. Seriously.
Fernandinho confirms Manchester City met with Cristiano Ronaldo. Well, we knew that.
Yes.
Yeah, we knew that.
That's not a revelation. No. And on a serious subject, football set to trial a first match with no heading.
Saw that. No heading.
No heading
in the penalty areas. But no heading outside the penalty areas.
But second half, completely off heading.
Yes, second half, no heading at all.
Listen. It's a very delicate subject to debate, and no one wants to see anyone injured because they headed football, me more than most. I certainly don't want to see myself suffer in the future. But listen, if it happens, it happens. If the game moves forward and everyone feels that's the best way forward for it, then listen, I have to sit here and take it. But I'm not looking forward to the day we start a Premier League season and no one's going to head the football.
No, I mean, that. For me, if that happens, that means like slowly.
Few
the game
have done more than we did, and it's never been recognised, Andy, in making this subject something that has found its way onto the lead story for agendas often. Dawn Astle, we embraced many years ago on this subject when finally it was proven that Jeff died as a result of an industrial injury. My only fear, and there needs to be more research, and we need to be sure that it's not damaging. But I'm slightly concerned that maybe because we've gone the other way now.
It's going to be damaging. Richard, it's going to be damaging. We are going to have the people going to this. Of course, it's going to be damaging. Of course, there are certain people who have played football. But think of the amount of people who have played football since we've been aware of it, say the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. How many people have played football, do you think, in the UK or in England, let's say? Thousands. Mm. Thousands. I don't know what the figures would be about the ones who have contracted dementia because of the sport they played. Because you know, you can't sit here and say that every footballer who suffers from dementia, it's because it's football.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's so important, I think, Nige. That, you know, and not everyone who plays football is going to get dementia. Mm-hmm. You know, that
I
just
think that's why you have to have research in place before really.
Some will, I think that's now been proven. Some will.
Yes.
It's the consequence and the average that we're prepared to accept.
Listen, I had as many balls as most.
Mm. That's what I said. I was looking across the table here. I was looking at Andy, and I was he's okay. And he was one of the players that, had the ball
it's
most
a subject,
of the times
obviously
during,
that's very close to your heart.
Yeah, of course it is.
It is very close to your heart. So we have to be delicate about the subject, because it's not only because we said, like, because of the love of the game, we don't want heading in the game.
What do we attribute it to? I mean, I'm 65. You know, my hero, Dennis Law, is 81.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, I know Dennis headed a lot of footballs as well, a bit like me. But has Dennis contracted dementia at 81 because he headed a football?
Well, this is what we need more research to discuss.
Or would he have contracted dementia anyway?
May have done. I said to you.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a hard one.
Okay. Why, if you're Steve Bruce, do you want to continue as the coach of Newcastle United?
I have no idea. And this is quite surprising for me as well. And I spoke about Steve Bruce and Newcastle last year, you know, when they had that bad spell. And I was still wondering why he was still the manager when they were close to the relegation spots. Of course, we all know Mike Ashley doesn't want to lose any money on any coaches, and especially want to pay him out.
Mike won't sack him because he doesn't give him any aggravation. Or didn't until the summer. Steve stuck his head above the parapet a touch to say he was disappointed with the transfer business. Mm-hmm. But I can't... There's a very good piece by Craig Hope, to be fair, in the Mail, who they dislike deeply in the Northeast, largely because he's always got the right story.
Well, Brucey and him don't get on. That's a certainty. That's a certainty.
I said last week, a lot of coaches took holiday. They do, and they will going forward at the next break. But apparently he came back, Brucey, for Monday afternoon of the second week rather than the morning, and players had been waiting. There are issues. Dwight Gayle and Graham Jones have fallen out because Jonesy this week apparently was saying to Gayle, it's always all about you. And Gayle snapped back, really? Well, mostly about you since you went with England. Mm. You know that kind of unrest around addressing them. Yeah. I just think he's getting hammered. Mm-hmm. It can't be very good for his mental health.
No.
And it can't be very good for the family. And I don't know what the upside is.
There isn't an upside. I mean, Steve Bruce must wake up every morning. We wake up every morning. Certainly when I played, when we played, even going to work of a weekend when we're going to do the Premier League, wake up every morning, looking forward to going into training. It was always a big highlight, getting in there, being with the lads, working for whether it's morning and afternoon or just morning sessions. You wake up and enjoy it. Coaches, managers do the same, must do the same. You know, they must love going into work, enjoy it. Oh, it's great. I'm in working with the boys today. I can't think Steve Bruce has ever woken up in the last 2 years and said, oh, I'm really looking forward to going to work today.
He must be. Otherwise, you don't stay a coach for that for 2 years. Of course, take away the financial aspect of it, that you always get paid, you know, at the end of the month. But apart from
Bruce,
that,
he can't need the money.
He doesn't need the money. Okay,
no, so what is it then?
What it might be, and we should consider this, is that he is a Geordie.
Yes, he is.
It is his football club. And I do believe he genuinely wants to do well there for the club, for Newcastle, for the supporters. Mm-hmm. I don't think they quite get that. No. I don't think they quite understand how deeply he feels about that club.
I understand.
Replace him, okay, but with what?
Or who?
Yeah, but that's the first question. But let me ask you this, seeing like the results of Newcastle over the last year, taking it back to last year, do you still think the players have the same confidence in him that before he was appointed?
Reading this, my answer would be no.
So you don't
think it's mixed?
You think he lost the dressing room?
No, I think it's mixed. I do think it's like every dressing room, Nige. I'm sure that even players in Man City's dressing room, I'm sure there's maybe two or three don't like Guardiola because they never get a look in. I'm sure there's some at Anfield. I'm sure there's some at Chelsea who are not getting picked to think, shit, this, I hate this. This is crap. I'm not happy here. Mm. Right? So you're going to get that. But I do think it's mixed. I think there will be players there that are right behind Steve. But I do think that maybe there'll be more than just a handful, maybe stirring the pot in the background, maybe making life difficult for Steve. I don't know. I don't know why he's not woken up one day and went, do you know what? Sod it.
Yeah.
You want me out? I'm out.
And everything comes with success. I mean, when you have success, I mean, it's easier to have your play secured and also have the players behind you as well if you have success. But if you don't have success, you know how it is in the dressing room. No success. They're going to talk among each other. They're going to stir the pot. Yeah. This is not good. Why I'm not playing? You get all these questions. And then you get the doubts into a manager's head as well.
Just a quick one about he's taking a break. Most coaches, an international break, take a break.
Correct.
Most try and nick away for 3 or 4 days and abroad.
Yes.
Now, the fact that he never was back for a Monday afternoon shouldn't concern anyone. He's the manager, right? Well, he is a bunch of coaches, yes, who are paid. So he could easily say, I'm going to be back on Monday afternoon, guys. So Graham Jones and so and so and so and so, get the boys in on Monday
morning. Well, that's the problem. There was a communication issue that some players turned up in the morning and he didn't turn up until the afternoon. Now, that sounds to me as though something went wrong.
But it tells you the frustrations that's going on right now in the organization.
We've not taken exception just because you took a break last international break. Yeah, Nigel and I were here knocking our pants
out.
You were away in the sunshine.
That's okay.
I was back to do the job that I'm paid to do.
That's something
else. I would like to say, I think Harvey Elliott has grown in my estimation this past week. Yeah. Very, very mature young man.
Yeah.
He started to make himself undroppable.
Undroppable.
The way he's handled the whole incident, exactly, including removing blame from strike.
Is it the FA?
Yeah.
How pathetic have they been?
My view on that, Andy, would be that they probably got a call from somewhere. Because too many reds last year were overturned, and I think there's been a. It's making them look daft at the PGMOL, particularly because
you know, Mike Riley's shout.
I didn't say that. I just said he maybe got a call from somewhere.
You said getting a call. That means if I'm right, Mike Riley.
I think it's ridiculous. So you're speculating from the minute it happened, and we didn't look at it again, but we knew it was worthy of a red. The referee on the day didn't think it was a free kick,
no,
let alone a bad challenge. So wave play on, and it was only when Salah saw the ankle the way it was dislocated and the manner it was that he could draw attention to it. So the fact that they've gone, okay, we've sent them off on the day because no one was quite sure what about it, but then having looked at it and then having Harvey Elliott come out and say what he said, to then say, well, we get your appeal, but you can do one.
Yeah, you see, what bothers me about that is you and I were sitting, you weren't in, Nige. We actually contacted the PGMOL on the day to say whose decision was that. And we were told it was the fourth officials, that it was an on-field decision. Andy Madley, who was fourth, had told the referee, that's a bad challenge, it's a red. And I said, well, that doesn't strike me as being correct because protocol says that the VAR's got to look at it anyway. So I said, can you call them back and check that and see whether or not it was VAR or no, definitely Andy Madley on the side of the pitch. So that was twice.
So in this case, the referee didn't even have a chance. The
ref didn't give a foul.
No, didn't he have the chance to review it by himself?
No, he didn't.
So he got a call from his fourth official.
Yeah. No, he got a call from the fourth. And then on Monday morning, Mark Clattenburg's writing in his column in the Mail saying, well, VAR decided it was... VAR didn't, from what they told us.
No.
So we're always going to ask questions, guys. My message is get your story straight and when it doesn't match, be honest enough to hold your hands up and say, well, maybe we got that one
wrong.
We got it wrong.
Even the people like Clattenburg and the referees who were writing were all saying that this will be appealed by West Ham and quite rightly.
By Leeds.
And quite rightly, Strait's ban will be rescinded. And yet it wasn't.
Did they give him an extra game because he appealed? Did that?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's three games.
See, that's ridiculous.
Apart from that, can we give a big shout out to Elliot, the way how he handled the business on his age as well and come out and made a statement as well to Strike.
Yes.
Because, you know, Strike must feel very bad.
Yeah, we'll forgive him for the barbed jibe at Manchester United fans. No, Harvey, you haven't got more legs than they've won trophies in the last 8 years.
Unless
you've got four legs.
Yeah.
Harvey Elliott, great response.
Wonderful, really like it. Okay, now it's time to introduce our guest, and the subject matter I think first up will be Pep Guardiola.
Ooh.
Urges more Manchester City fans to attend their Premier League clash with Southampton in a thinly veiled dig at absent supporters over 17,000 empty seats against Leipzig. Mm. The response from Manchester City fans is, oh yeah, well, how about you buy some? You're earning 300 grand a week. You buy them and give them to local school children. We'll fill the stadium.
Mm.
Who's right?
I mean, this is a hard one because obvious. I understand his intention is what he's trying to say because he wants to have a full stadium to get the full response. But you have to sometimes also think about the situation that certain fans are in and they don't have the money to buy a ticket a midweek game. So it's just a little bit of a balance and I think in a miscommunication. So what's good for Guardiola to do right now is also to talk to one of the heads of the Man City's fan clubs and say, like, listen, I didn't mean that. That was not my intention.
Would he be well advised to actually do what the City fans have suggested and buy 15,000 school children a ticket?
No, I don't know. Maybe
it's 1 week's wages.
Listen, rather than Pep Guardiola buy 15,000 school children, what might be nice if Manchester City themselves, who are an extremely rich football club, on a night like that, when you know your crowd's going to be there, you know it.
Yeah, they don't. For some reason, they don't embrace it, do they?
The Champions League has been like
it's always been like that.
It's a thing, but City should say, right, we're only going to sell 35,000 tickets tonight, so we're going to distribute 15,000 among school children as a club, so that we fill our ground with maybe future fans that we can grab and take hold of and keep them there.
Well, so, you have school nights as well, and the nights are nights are late, and kids got to go to school next day in the morning early on. So it's hard just to say like, okay, 15,000 tickets.
Yeah, but they still fill Old Trafford with the same problem. I just don't think City fans like playing in Europe. They don't like UEFA.
I mean, since we play European nights over there, it was always half empty. So we never complained about it. It was what it was, and we just had to accept it. The main thing and the main target for most of the fans is the Premier League. You know, during the weekend. You know how important
it is for the fans, but for the club, it remains the Champions League.
I'll tell you what as well.
Now, but can we agree that Man City will cruise through the group stages?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think there's an issue. I think right now we can predict.
The trouble is, when you have a tournament,
I would say fifth. How many qualify?
16. 32.
Well, you could call 30 of them now, couldn't you?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, 32. Eight groups, 16.
So they will turn up when it's going to get.
You could name 15 or 16, probably.
Correct.
Yeah, but the other thing I'm just going to say, be careful. All you guys who want an extra World Cup, more games, people don't like the Champions League. It happens too many games where fans are not going to watch it. I'm telling you. Anyway, that's for another day.
Manchester City fans, let's introduce our guest. And that guest is Uwe Rösler.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Rösler, you pronounce it right this time?
Barry Davies always used to call, former BBC commentator, yes. Rösler. I thought it was Rösler. Uh-huh. Who better to ask than the man himself, Uwe? How are you?
Hi. Good, good. How are you?
We're good, thank you. Rosler?
I got used to Rosler. And normally Rösler, in Germany Rösler. But I am now, when I'm in Germany and they ask me who I am, I say Uwe Rosler. Yeah.
See, the effect of living in the UK as long as you did is perfect. Yes.
And we all know how good you guys are with accents, so let's just keep it on Rösler.
Rösler. Well, you're right. Nigel makes a very good point, to be fair. We're not the best, are we? In fact, we're embarrassing. We only have one language, most of us.
Exactly. No wonder why they call me DJ, because they can't pronounce my last name.
No, that's true. De Jong.
That is true, Uwe. It's easier to call him DJ because most of the places he's played his football, they can't pronounce De Jong, which is not hard, is it?
It is hard, and you pronounce it perfectly.
De Jong.
It's easy. De Jong.
That's one of the easy ones.
The hero, if I'm not mistaken, Uwe, of one of your sons, Nigel De Jong. How did that happen?
Oh, yes. Yeah. My son obviously grew up in the UK, learned his trade at the Manchester City Academy, and obviously started as a central midfielder, and he always loved Nigel. Winning the ball, give it. Nigel was very influential in that period to bring this club, starting to bring this club there where the club is now. And my son really admired him for the way he played.
Yeah, at Chelsea, they call him, they suggest that Makélélé created that position. I think De Jong was the first to start doing that.
It's right up there. Yeah, definitely right up there.
Mm. Yeah. I think, thank you. First of all, thank you very much for your admiration of your son. I think that's opened the ears here on this table because, you know, the way how they always talking about that position.
Can I be honest with you? I saw Uwe in Mallorca about 10 days ago, and when he told me this, I dropped my glass.
Did you really?
What?
You thought he was going to say Yaya Touré, which is sudden stuff.
There was no Yaya Touré. There was no De Jong, trust me.
But your affection for Manchester City started a long time ago, didn't it? I didn't realise this, but the names of your boys were chosen as a result of affection you had for two City players.
Yeah, definitely. My oldest one called Tony after Tony Book. Tony Book was one of our assistants in the coaching staff, and I had a very close relationship to him. And he helped me a lot, you know, when you're coming as a foreigner, especially from the East, from East Germany. So there was obviously a culture shock for me. And Tony was one of the guys who really helped me to settle, helped me to understand the football from the Premier League. And obviously Colin Bell, my youngest one, he still plays football in Mac Breda. We gave him the name Colin.
Brilliant.
Because of
fantastic.
It's great. I love that.
That's true and
a proper fan. Yeah.
Yeah. Proper City fan.
Do you think anyone's named their kids after you, Keezy?
What, Dick?
Uwe, I was just going to say, do you talk about when you arrived in England, just quick, in the problems? I'm looking at 2 years after the Premier League started, maybe, was that 94? So there weren't as, I mean, now the Premier League is just full of foreign imports, people who have come and played. But in those days, we were still getting to know you guys as much as you were getting to know us. So what made it difficult then? Was it just the lack of fellow foreigners?
I came in a very difficult time for myself because I had a bad year in Nuremberg in the Bundesliga. I went back to my club where I went from, Dynamo Dresden, and played 5 games, and I had got a bad injury. Uh-huh. After that, it was very difficult for me to come back into the team, and I went on the journey to the Premier League. And for a relatively young player coming from the East, obviously the type of football was completely different. And Germany at the time was very much man-marking, a sweeper. And certainly then playing against two lines of force suited me really well, but I needed to understand. And I was very, very lucky and fortunate that we had a very experienced team. We had players like Paul Walsh, Niall Quinn, McMahon, who teached me the game, Keith Curl, who teached me the game. Obviously, the manager who signed me, Brian Horton, he was also very influential to me. But at that time, a lot of our relations we developed on the pitch by talking to each other, by finding out about each other, by finding the chemistry. I really, really needed that help. Mm-hmm. And I took it on board and took it to my game, and the rest is history.
Do you think Uwe, coming from West Germany, and especially in the environment that you were growing up, do you think the adjustment in city was an easier adjustment than anywhere else in the world because of the city that you were in, the hard working class people, the fans that were there as well? Was the adjustment?
You say Moss side is a little bit like East Germany.
Yes, I think he's saying that. Have you been in Moss side recently?
Was the adjustment easier for you? And especially because I don't know, you speak in English before?
No, then was it?
No.
So was the adjustment for you
any
easier?
English.
Was the adjustment easier for you?
I didn't speak any English, so that made the integration even harder.
Yeah.
But I put a lot of effort in because I realized pretty early that it's a big opportunity for me. So, and you have to commit 100%. So that means you have to learn the language as quick as you can. And I went basically from the second or third week, I went into college two times a week. The club had organized for me, and to learn the language that the player sees, I really committed to the course. And but you made a very good point. After unification, I went over to West Germany, to the Bundesliga. We won promotion with Dynamo Dresden into the Bundesliga, but going over the former border to the other part of Germany was different. And what was different was the way the players lived with each other, competed with each other in the team. In the East, it was very much about the collective approach to the game. In the West was very much myself have to survive, myself have to be better than my opponent and to stay into the team. And that took me a little while to understand that. And when I came over to Manchester City, the players there, we did everything together. Like after the games, the next day, Keith Curl organized, as the captain, organized golf. So there were 8-9 players there. And I couldn't play golf. I was driving the boogie and serving the drink. But I just wanted to be with them. And after the games, we went always collectively out. So, and that was what I was used from the East, that we as a team, we play together and we also socialize together. And I really felt that was not far away from the way I'd grown up.
You mentioned Brian Houghton, Uwe. Mm. Did you have a good working relationship and an affection with every coach at Manchester City? I mean, for instance, Alan Ball.
Oh, that's not nice. Did you, come on.
Did you get on with Bally?
At first, Brian Houghton was influential. He signed me. He saw something in me and what he said, okay, we take him on 3 months on loan. And then obviously the loan got into a permanent for 3 years. So when I arrived at City in England, I wasn't fit. I was probably 60-70% because I had not played for 4 months. Mm. So, but they throw me because Niall Quinn got a cruciate ligament injury, and they throw myself and Paul Walsh right in the deep end. And we needed to survive, and we did. The team was saving from relegation. And we starting to form a partnership. When Quinny came back, I was thinking, Paul Walsh were, in my opinion, number one. And then was between me and Quinny. But Brian Houghton stuck by me and gave me so much confidence. And also find in the end a way to play all three of us, because Quinny was an excellent player.
Yeah.
I really be thankful to him that he took me in the first place, but that also that he developed me.
Let me put this another way then, to get to the story that I'm digging for. how would you react ahead of a Manchester derby if you'd been told you were going to play and then didn't?
Obviously not very good, and that is what I did. And I'm not very proud of this. Looking back, being now a coach by myself, I asked myself, would you like that the player now doing that to you? But my answer is no.
What did you do?
I was wrong. yeah, my ego got ahead of me, and obviously I did something on the pitch after scoring against Man United.
Something? Let me guess.
No, they're celebrating the goal, but...
Still images.
There are still images, Nigel. Yes, yeah. There are still images. Yes, but it wasn't just a celebration. By the way, it was a worldie. It was a magnificent goal, and I think probably Uwe, as much as anything else, that endeared you to Manchester City fans. But it was we discussed this the other week, Uwe, and it was the post match interview that probably he didn't hold back.
Well,
he didn't.
His English probably wasn't very good.
I didn't hold back, and exactly, they didn't understand. I regret what I did, and that's fair enough. And I would apologize when Bolly would be still with us, and God bless him. I was wrong, and I admit that. And
Did you give an apology straight after the game, or a couple of days after? Or did you stand your ground?
No, I think Nigel, I think with some people it takes maybe a little bit longer sometimes to understand.
I can tell
there's that German stubbornness. I've been in Germany.
German stubbornness. That's from a Dutchman.
We have a similar.
I can remember.
I should apologize to someone in 1976, Uwe, but I couldn't be asked. So he's still waiting. So it's not bad.
No, I think that's very honourable. Now, talk to us about what the future holds, because your last post you left in Germany, yeah, Düsseldorf?
Fortuna,
yeah?
Yeah.
What are you now doing? Resting, or are you actively looking? Would you back in?
First and foremost, my contract was running out in Düsseldorf. I had an 18-month contract, and we both sides came to a conclusion that the club want to go in a different direction, what absolutely is okay, because my contract was running out. What I'm doing now is I'm discovering social media. I was probably, as a coach, seeing sometimes what that can do to players, to their confidence. I was probably against that, but now having a little bit more time at the moment, working in the media as well, I find that very useful tool going forward too.
Is that something that you see as a coach as well, that it has a big influence on the team, and that you have to develop yourself as a coach coming from a different era, that you have to understand what's going on nowadays with the youth, to understand them better, and not always saying, hey, put your phone away, or do this or do that, or your tablet away, don't be on your phone 24/7?
When I was a younger coach, I started to do that, what you just described now. But when you're getting older, you have more experience. I knew quite early that you can't stop that. You know, the players will not follow you, because that is for them a very, very important tool. For me, I have an advantage. I have two boys. So one is 21 and one is 24. So they're growing up with me and our family. So. Mm. And also coaching for a long time now, 17 years, being with young people together all the time, obviously that makes you understanding how young people tick, what is important for them. And coming back off social media can be very useful, can be very good, but it also can be damaging for players. Yes. And also for when you're coming in as a coach right after the game into the dressing room, sometimes you're coming in after 5 minutes, after 10 minutes, and already the players went through their phones and and get all their feedback.
Absolutely.
And then you coming as a coach, as the fifth or sixth or 100th person to try to give you feedback for the game. So this is sometimes very difficult, but that is the way we live in now. This is the modern world. We can't stop it. I think it's very beneficial in many ways, but you have to, as a professional athlete, you have to learn how to deal with that.
Absolutely.
That's very fair. Nigel's been nodding in agreement, Uwe, all the while that you've been talking. Two other things. Colin, it is, who's the player, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
How's he going?
Good. He's playing tonight. Vanak Preda. Yeah, he's a young defender with 9 years at Manchester City. He got a very good upbringing. He got taught the basics, what a modern center half need to have these days. And now he makes his first steps in senior football, in men's football, in results-orientated football. And
brilliant.
A young defender makes mistakes, but he learned quick. He has to learn quick, and he will learn quick. He's smart, and I hope his dream come through.
Does he have the character and the persistence as his dad?
Cool. He's halfway there if he does.
He has the character. This is why he chose you as his idol, because he's a warrior. He's a fighter.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. You're working on German television, Uwe, with a very good friend.
Very good friend of ours.
Jan Augefjordtoft.
Yes.
Who's a very honourable...
Well, did you say working? I mean, I'm assuming Jan does let you speak every now and again, Uwe. Is that fair?
First and foremost, I have to correct you, Rich. I'm working for a Norwegian channel.
A Norwegian, Norwegian,
German,
okay.
German Bundesliga.
So
we're covering for We Are Play in Norway or Scandinavia. We're covering the Bundesliga, and Jan Nagel and I we working pitch side at the games. Obviously, the interest in Norway is very much on Borussia Dortmund and Erling Haaland.
Yeah,
and that is how we work. And I think I know Jan Arger for a long time. I know him as a player.
Yeah.
We played in similar time in England. But he was my first sporting director. He gave me my first job as a coach and in Lillestrøm. And since then, we know each other really well and we never lost contact. And doing that now, I think, is very important for me to use that time now between jobs to rest and recharge.
Yeah.
But also to always update yourself, always keep yourself going, be involved in the game, and I never can rest. Yesterday I did 6 hours on EuroLeague and in the Euro Conference League. I don't know how many games I saw yesterday.
24, I think it was.
Unbelievable. And it's fun, but it's also education.
It is. Never stop learning in this game, Uwe. No. Never stop learning.
What's your best guess where Haaland goes?
Oh.
Haaland will have a very good season this year. And next season, I guess he will go. Where he will go, there's not many clubs who can afford him. Can afford his wage demand and his transfer fee. So then you can get.
Do we want
only 3-4 clubs?
Do we want to see him at City next year? Him over Kane or Kane over Haaland?
Well, Haaland's 7 years younger for a start.
Exactly. When you do such an investment, the whole package, transfer fee and wages. Agency fee, you as a club, you need to have this player 5, 6, 7, 8 years in the best case, and I think that put him in front of Harry Kane.
Okay, so your choice is made then.
Yeah, Manchester United will nick another player off you. Yeah, just as you're about to sign, and then he'll come United.
Last one, Uwe. We were discussing it before you joined us. Why can't Manchester City fill their stadium on European nights? And has Pep Guardiola got a point?
I saw the interview, and I don't think Pep meant how it's been reported in the media or how the message been received in the media. That's, for me, point one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every coach wished that the stadium is full. Every coach wished that in a difficult period with a lot of games, with a tight schedule, that you know the next game will be tough. It will be really tough. And, of course, then you always think about this 5-10%. That is what we missed in Corona. We are football without supporters in Corona. It's not football.
No, it's not.
And I don't think Pep meant it the way it's been received in the media. So why the club can't fill the stadium? I don't know. Of course, there's through Corona, everyone was hitting economically, not only football clubs, also private people, every private person. There's a lot of people who struggle in all Europe and all over in the world. So in Manchester City, you have every 3 or 4 days quality games to go to. The season ticket is very expensive. Then you want to go with your family, with 2 kids and your wife. This hit you very, very hard in the pocket. So, of course, that is the economical side. Could be one reason. But I don't know. I don't know why. Because RB Leipzig is now, these days, a top opposition in European football. Mm. Yeah.
Uwe, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
Do please take our best wishes thank with you at the weekend for Jan.
Yes, yes. Mr.
Fjortoft,
send us a
and all the best. And all the best this weekend to your boy Colin as well.
Yes.
Yeah, he's playing he's playing international football as well, Uwe, isn't he? Plays for Norway.
Yeah, under-21s and under-20s and under-21s. Yeah.
So we might see him on the big stage very soon.
Well, we hope so.
And he has your last name, I reckon.
Yes, Rösler.
Yeah.
Okay, see?
Yeah.
Do you want to say it one time in with a German accent?
I like it. Rösler.
We've anglicized him. He's Uwe Rösler.
Put the emphasis on the O.
Love to everybody your end, Uwe, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, and have a good day.
Great. Tell Fjortoft we might, but we're not certain. We might at some point call him.
Yeah, we might. He's not as good as you, so don't tell him that. But obviously,
all the best, Uwe.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Great to talk. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Lovely guy. Lovely guy. And if you had the determination he's got, you're halfway. Like I said during the conversation, you're really halfway towards being a player.
That's what I said as well. I mean, his determination, persistence was second to none.
Yeah.
And by the way, a great guy, aware, intelligent, smart. How he comes across as well.
When we first met, it wasn't the first occasion we met him. We spent time with him on TalkSport. Came in as a guest for an hour, managing Brentford. And he blew Andy away. We went for a drink afterwards and Andy went, wow.
Yeah, I did.
I mean, what a guy.
Yeah, no wonder he played for City.
Yeah. Oh. Wow.
Memo to Andy Carroll.
Oh.
Who's still looking for a club. Did a piece with Alan Shearer this week for The Athletic, complaining about the manner in which Newcastle turned him out. After one goal and I think 74 appearances, I don't think he's got anything to complain about, do you?
Well, I'm amazed he got 74.
Yeah, they weren't all starts, but...
I mean...
He's 32, he's looking for a club. I think he's probably...
Was his contract up?
His
contract's up, there's been nothing in the last 3 years that suggested Andy would get another contract at Newcastle, surely?
No.
Nothing?
No.
He will get a job. He will find a club. I mean, he's 32 years of age. There will be a club there somewhere that's searching for a player like him, a striker like him as well. So he will get a club, but unfortunately, he's not going to be at Newcastle anymore. He had 2 spells there. Didn't really work out in the second spell.
No.
And we've seen as well from how many of these 74 games he came in as a sub?
Yeah,
say 50.
Probably, I would say 50 more than 50%. Yeah, 50. I'm guessing, but I think he got one goal.
He'll have to drop down the leagues. That's
well, Reading asked and he said no. So I don't know what
he wants to stay in the Premier League. I don't think he's getting anyone in the Premier League. I have to be honest.
No contact from
club football at that age is very important. Yeah. This stage, very, very important. So wherever he goes, he needs to play.
Well, he hasn't played for 4 years, so he needs to get going.
I've enjoyed it again.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got momentum. We will see you next week. You're listening to Keys and Grey. Download from any of the regular podcast sites that you currently get pods from. We are at Keys and Grey, the podcast. See you next week.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.